Blog Talk Radio.
So very faithless and perverse generation. Can you say faithless and what else? What makes a man get perverted without faith? What's perverted our Christianity? Faithless.
Don't say that profess that God has given you power, love, and a sound mind, and your mind is not sound. You don't have power to overcome your present situation and circumstances.
Now the devil is always pushing. You can recognize the demons working because they always push to impetuous, immediate action. Don't think, do. And the devil says, if you don't do it now, you'll miss the opportunity. If you don't move now, if you don't sell now, if you don't jump now, it'll be gone.
And the kingdom of God is best expressed by authority and power to cast out devils.
Listen, dear friends. Don't forget that little word he said, seek ye first. Come on. That's the secret right there. Seek ye first. Seek ye first. Oh, I tell you, the average person said, seek me first. That's it. Seek me first. Put me first.
Well, anyone who opposes the kingdom of God and the casting out of devils. Because when we're of God's kingdom, our sole purpose is to destroy Satan's kingdom. Our sole purpose is to cast down Satan's kingdom.
I can tell you whether you won souls or not, whether you get your prayers answered, whether you're happy or not, whether you got a happy home or not, whether you're worth killing in the church or not. I can tell you, if you love your friends and let me see how you start your day out, if you grab a cup of coffee and a newspaper and sit down for an hour and let the Bible go begging, brother, you're mixed up in worldliness.
The Word of God said, we're going over to the other side. And in the midst of the Word of God said, we are going over to the other side, the enemy showed up in the storm. And the first thing that the enemy did was challenge those who walk with Christ. Those who eat with him and slept with him and saw the miracle, the signs and the wonders done by him. The first thing that the enemy did was steal the word that they heard right out of their hearts and then allow doubt to rise up on the inside of them. And instead of believing what the word of God said, they said, Lord, we perish.
Reading the word that's going to give you faith, that isn't what he's talking about. It isn't just hearing the word that's going to give you faith. You've got to open your spiritual ear or eye as you hear or read the word and appropriate by faith. Make it yours.
That'll sober you up. That ought to melt your silly heart. I'm not interested in your feelings and your little silly sentimentality. I'm wondering about your love for Christ and compassion for others. Do you care? I'm asking you one question tonight. Do you love Jesus or do you love this stinking world?
But God wants us to be doers of the word and not hearers only. Deceiving ourselves. How many folks are deceived every single week? Going to hear what they call the word and it never once emboldens them or give them a desire or a passion to do the works of Christ.
We want just a bunch of sickly sentimentality and we want to just fix up sort of a hiding place and a loophole for sinners to say, well, if that old cuss made it in, I can make it in myself.
The kingdom is within you. And the only kingdom that this world is going to understand until the king comes is what they see in us. Because now we are the only creatures that have the ability to walk in darkness and to walk in light.
Oh, God's people, glory!
Hey, bless you all. Shalom, shalom, shalom to you saints. Glory to the King. Blessings on this first day evening of the month of March. Bless you all. Hope you all had a great day. Hope you're still chewing immensely on the Shabbat message yesterday. All right, thank you, sir. Thank you, my sisters and brothers, for the report. Appreciate it very much. For giving me that sound check. Faithful as always. Hope you're all doing well. 15 days before Passover, You got days, you got a couple weeks to really reflect and work on yourself, work on your spirit, work on your inner man, check your hearts for bitterness, check your speech as you speak, and see what your heart, the issues your heart are actually speaking out of your mouth. This by above and beyond all feast days, and mind you, it's the first one of the year, is there to check your spirit, to make it known how serious it is by when you sit and partake of Yahweh's Passover. And then hopefully that you can go into it clean and stay clean for the whole entire year and come back to the next Passover. But again, we still have a short number of days to prepare our hearts and minds. And, you know, that's the expectation from the Most High, that given the information that we get, the preaching and the teaching, he's removed every excuse that we could possibly have from not doing what it takes to get our hearts right and be ready and fully persuaded that we're able to take his Passover. But anyway, bless y'all. It's a very lengthy study tonight. Again, thank you, Brother Josh, for always being faithful and you know, taking the time out to do the postings in the chat room. Bless your Sister Heidi and Sister Brittany and Sister Nanette and my brother Man Life for Yah. Bless y'all. Diane and Lisa listening by phone, and those are listening by internet. But hey, glory to the King. You know, this, I've had this subject prepared for probably 3 weeks. It's been in my spirit, what I'm going to talk to you about tonight. It seems kind of out of step with, you know, just coming into the Passover, but I believe the Most High does all things perfectly, decently, in order, and does all things well, which I'm absolutely convinced that he does. And there's no doubt, because he's the Elohim. But again, this was put in my spirit some weeks ago, and I prepared it, and I'm not going to deviate from it, because I believe that this is something the Most High wants me to speak about. So the topic tonight is called Wicked Children and Compromising Parents. Again, Wicked Children and Compromising Parents. It's very lengthy. It's probably going to go a full 2 hours because I have a lot of information here. And as you well know, that when I do these blog talk radio programs, I try to let the word interpret the word. You know, I may put my commentary in here and there, but I always trust that it's lining up with what's already in the context and content, what's been on the written page, and what you're hearing just repeated in your ears. So I won't sit here and ramble. We'll get started again tonight. The focus is on wicked children and compromising parents. All right. So with that, we're going to get started. All right. Just some quick bullet points. Your son or daughter's longevity in the body is based on their relationship with Messiah. We can find so many examples of righteous fathers only to see their sons and daughters turn their hearts to serving to the world and the devil. You may bring up your children in the admonition of the Master, but it doesn't mean they will hold it. And we're going to show that too, and we're going to prove that. Some fathers and mothers will lose their soul over their children. Again, they're all tests. Bringing a child to an assembly in order for them to experience and hear the truth doesn't mean they will receive it or absorb it. That's your hope, but that may not be in their heart. We have seen fathers and mothers time again leave the ministry because their wicked son or daughter, they left the faith and went back to the world. They couldn't see that it was a test to show them where their hearts were, and I'm talking about these fathers and mothers. They were only here because they're showing themselves part of the body because their children were here ahead of them, and when the children left, there went the parents. And I'm going to use the word parents just for just simplicity in this broadcast. You cannot save your son or daughter. They can only save themselves by their own display and walk of righteousness. If they want to go and serve the world, let them go, as this might be the only way to wake them up and help them realize they need Messiah, they need Jesus. The ancients actually put their sons to death because of rebellion in the home, sons that would not listen, and yet we have fathers and mothers who will hold on to these wicked children, young and old, in a hope that they will change. Yahweh did not see it that way. He commanded we put away the evil from amongst us. Many parents have this savior complex, believing that they can get their children saved. I have seen many parents who have brought their children to get baptized, thinking this has to secure them because they're going through the rite of baptism. But how many of these children actually fully understood the process they were undergoing? What did it mean to them in their heart? Did they do it because mommy and daddy said they needed to be baptized, or because that they asked to, or because did they ask to get baptized, meaning they had a full comprehension about what it was they were about to partake in? Fathers and mothers must show themselves serious to the faith and to this walk of sacrifice and servitude, that their children may see how beautiful serving Yah is. Otherwise, these children are in danger of becoming lost, as the devil is always seeking whom he may devour. Sons and daughters may possess a healthy fear of Yahweh, or their walk will be in danger. They must possess a healthy fear of Yah. Paramount. Wicked children, especially those who have reached a grown-up stage, are not always the result of a poor father or mother's upbringing. They simply are not called or chosen and will make their own way. They may do Yahweh lip service because of the environment they are in, but rest assured, if they have no love or care for Yahweh, they will seek to get out from under their parents and seek the world for satisfaction. And the last one. It is clear that after the resurrection of Messiah, Yahweh is the one building the body. His assembly, by those he calls and chooses, it is the master that adds to the assembly. So that's the bullet points. Again, this is quite lengthy. I'm going to hopefully get done in 2 hours without rushing it. But I just felt it needed to have this much information to, you know, really, really bring home the point. All right, Josh, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 1 through 7. We're going to go through some illustrations of wicked children and compromising, well, in this case, fathers, mostly fathers, but you can just put yourself in the place of parents, mother, or father, because it can reflect the same in the ability, in the resistance to do anything with children that are living a wicked lifestyle, okay? So, starting at verse 1, 1 Samuel 8:1, and it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. So Samuel was a judge himself. He was also a prophet. If you remember, he was Hannah's son, the one that she had vowed to the Most High, and in her when she was before Eli the priest, and he accused her of being drunk, and she vowed that if Yah would give her a child, a son, that he would be there to serve the Most High all his days. And you find out later on that, you know, according to the numbers, when it's talking about vows, at the time that Elkanah came to the knowledge of this vow, is that at that time he had he allowed it to go when she brought it up and told him about the thing about the weaning. But anyway, okay, so the two sons of, the two sons of Samuel, again, that he was a judge and they were to be judges after him. Now the name of the firstborn was Joel, and the name of the second, Abiah. They were the judges in Beersheba. So you got Samuel and his two sons are all in the place of judges in Israel and amongst Israel. And his sons walked not in his ways, meaning Yah's ways and the example his father set, but turned aside after lucre and took bribes and perverted judgment. The assumption here is that Samuel's sons walked in the ways of their father Samuel prior to their appointment as judges. It was after that they turned to a wicked ways and ambitions not yet known or revealed. It came about through the process of time. It is doubtful that Samuel would have ever allowed or considered this appointment if there was no evidence that his sons would turn to evil ways. Dishonor their father, and more importantly, dishonor Yah. Okay, in verse 4. Then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah, and said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. But the thing displeased Samuel, this request by the people to depart from the judges, that were the thing that Yah had only prescribed in Israel up until this time when the people started to decide that they needed it done another way, and said to give us a king to judge us, and Samuel prayed unto Yahweh. You know, he prayed implying that Yahweh never meant for the people to be ruled over by a king, a one single man which, unlike a judge in Israel, was able to cause all those who were subordinate to become slaves. And that's what happens because there's a different relationship between judges amongst the body versus kings amongst the body. And Yahweh said unto Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto thee. For they have not rejected thee. It's nothing to do with you, Samuel. It's nothing you said, nothing you stood for. But they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. So the people are removing let me read this. The people no longer look to the judges set before them in Israel as those who make judgments among and for the people. The people no longer wanted to have the liberty afforded them as free individuals, but now demanded that they be placed in subordinate roles and servants to one man. This was the place that belonged to Yahweh alone, and the people rejected the men, the judges who Yahweh had placed over them, and sought a man to now rule over him. Judges adjudicated and set the order, whereas kings chart the courses of men's lives. Men's fates are in the hand of the king, unlike the judges which spoke on behalf of Yahweh and were charged to keep the balance and order based on the Torah of Yahweh and reigned over no man. Kings were a rejection of Yahweh. That's clear. They reject thee and they want a man placed over them to rule, not the judges that I set up for them ever since the time of Moshe. If Yahweh had meant for one sole ruler to be over the people, it stands to reason that he would have made it so long before this time. Okay, in verse 8. And according to all the works which you have done since the day that I brought them up out of the Egypt unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee. This verse is basically saying that the people forsook the judges, such as Samuel, had been to the people and desired to become the servants to, quote, other gods, as such would be the manner of a king, placing themselves as the supreme ruler over the people. They're looking to this king. Now, they're not looking to Yah's judgments. They're looking to this king to rule over them, okay? God's being compared to kings coming under their rule and authority rather than Yahweh's. Again, Yahweh never meant for his people to be oppressed under a king, which means subject to harsh and authoritarian treatment should the king choose to go that direction. Not saying that he's weak, he might, but is he subject to bring that type of harsh treatment upon the people? Okay, 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 12 through 17. So we just got done reading about Samuel, a righteous man in Israel, a judge in Israel, who lived a dedicated, set-apart life, was a perfect example of a father figure to his two sons, and then he appointed his two sons, and they went to wickedness right away. I don't know if you don't know if they took advantage of the position they were in. You don't know if they got heady and high-minded because they were appointed judge over the people and they had a position that was elevated above the people. But for whatever reason, they turned to wicked ways and they were called out. And then the people, because of, not because of Samuel, but because of these two sons, thought it better to have a man rule over them than have the judges adjudicate amongst the people, if you're following me so far. So we're going through these examples showing that it's not always the parents, it can be the children turn wicked, even though they're raised a certain way. And we're going to see other instances here where you have a compromising parent that doesn't deal with the children, and they both fail. They all fail, okay? So, again, 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 12 through 17, we're going to talk about the Eli, the priest, and his two sons. Now, the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not Yahweh. So right away, we just kick off right here. And again, please go back and read before and after so you get the full context. I try to include as much context without consuming too much time on one particular event or story, just enough because I trust that a great many of you already know what I'm talking about and are familiar with these accounts. So, now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Most High. They knew not Yahweh. How is this possible that the sons of Eli knew not the Most High. I mean, think about it. Were they not serving in the role as Levite priest? Were they not seen as representatives of the law who must know the instruction of Yahweh and perform these functions, and yet it is written they knew not Elohim? Were they not accounted as Israel, the chosen people? Were they not recognized as being the number, part of the body? How is it that the record tells us that they were sons of Belial, sons of the devil, those sons of the high priest serving in the order of the priesthood? How is that? Just because you have children that go through the motions and stand among the assembly doesn't mean that they are serving the Most High. Again, we have a clear picture of that. These things are written for our learning and our admonition. That's all I'm doing, is just bringing out what has already been written. Okay, verse 13. And the priest's custom was with the people was, this is a custom, that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came while the flesh was in seething with a flesh hook of three teeth in his hand. So this was the custom with the people. This is something they were used to. These practices became customs because of the failure to enforce the right order and law of things. People got accustomed to the new way that these people were doing things, these ones that were in authority, and they didn't say anything about it, they didn't contest it, they just accepted it, that because these people were in the position they were in, it was, you know, allowable to do such things, right? Because they were under the scrutiny or under the authority or subordinate to these rulers and leadership over them. Again, these practices became customs because of the failure to enforce the right order and law of things. These customs were allowed to take root because there was no man standing up and voicing the wickedness of such things, no man challenging these new practices, even though they involved the highest of authority in Israel. This is why we must have accountability across the board, as checks and balances are crucial to maintaining right order and structure. To remove oneself from accountability is to remove oneself from judgment, to place oneself on a throne of their own making, to place oneself in the place of Yahweh, who cannot be judged, who cannot be held accountable to man, for Yahweh has no accountability to any of his creation, meaning that all men are accountable one to another. The only deity, Yahweh, that's just, let me say that, okay? You know, sometimes my words just don't land right, but he is the only thing we identify as having zero accountability, because he is the creator, he sets all things in order, it's for his purpose. What can the creation say to the creator? Nothing. And he struck it into the pan, or kettle, or cauldron. Again, we're talking about this custom that the priest did, that the people had learned to accept. And he struck it into the pan, or the kettle, or cauldron, or pot. All that the flesh hook brought up for the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh unto all the Israelites that came thither. And Shiloh is where the tabernacle ended up being for centuries. So that's where the priesthood, a bulk of the priesthood was placed. And also before they burnt the fat, because we can go back and read in the Torah the prescription, the prescribed way, the way that Yah had set it up for these sacrifices to be conducted. And before they burnt the fat, the priest servant came and said to the man that sacrificed, give flesh to roast for the priest, for he will not have sodden flesh leave but raw. So we're taking man, overruling what Yah had already set up. Again, these trusted sons, these priests that the people, blind loyalty, I guess, I don't know what you want to call it, but they just got accustomed to just going along with this, even though that the word tells these were sons of Belial. They were conditioned, right? And they were just, what do you say against somebody that's been placed in this position that Yah afforded them and them alone? That's a difficult thing to challenge. And verse 16, and if any man said unto him, let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as thy soul desireth, then he would answer him, nay, but thou shalt give it me now. If not, I will take it by force. This is demand. I don't care if you know the law. I don't care what you know about the customs of the burnt offering and any of the sacrifices. This is mine now, and I'm going to take it by force. If you don't get, this is how vile this spirit was. This is how entrenched and how selfish and how self-serving this spirit was. These spirits were in these two sons of Eli. And again, I mean, we're going to read about where he mildly dealt with them, but he didn't. I mean, if he's truly standing in the steed of the Most High and honoring Yah above all things, then he would have made much more greater effort. He would have brought this before the Most High and let him deal directly with these two sons, because he has a testimony against his own children, but we're going to find out more here. Okay, this is what happens to power left to itself and unchecked. It believes it's owed and has a right to have whatever it desires and what it wants and is willing to use force to prove the point. This authority will seek to magnify its position, will use its position to justify the use of such actions by a mere fact of title and position. There is no longer the fear of Yah or the fear of judgment. Such as these wicked sons who were used the advantage of their position and probably used the advantage of the position of their father, more credibility, as additional leverage to gain advantage over the people, and yet despite the questioning and opposition of the people, the father did nothing to stop this injustice and evil work. So I pray you're all following me yet again. It's wicked children compromising parents is the topic tonight. And we're going to see a lot of different dynamics that have entered in to allow a lot of these things to happen. Okay, verse 17. Wherefore the sin of the young men was very great before Yahweh, for men abhorred the offering of the Most High. All right, 1 Samuel chapter 2, 22 through verse 30. 1 Samuel 20, chapter 2, verses 22 through 30. Again, we're going some Old Testament records, Old Testament stories, events that, again, lay out what happened then, what was then, shall be again. We're gonna get into that as well. The same spirit can operate across the ages, across the span of time. That's the inherent nature of evil working in men. All right, 1 Samuel 2:22. Again, we're going to verse 30. Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel. So he's absolutely completely aware. He's been informed that all his wicked sons of Belial have been doing all these customs they brought in, stealing the sacrifice and reserving for themselves and taking actually from the Most High and what was required to go to him first. I mean, absolutely. And again, they were in this. They knew this. They practiced this. They walked in this. And yet, they had no trouble at all performing these evil deeds. Again, now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Not only are they stealing from the sacrifices meant for Yahweh, but they're also whoring themselves out with the women that are at the tabernacle. And just absolutely, totally disgracing not only the priesthood, but again, the tabernacle itself. And Yah ain't going to stand for it. And he said unto them, why do ye such things? What are you doing? I mean, Eli's questioning his sons, what the hell are you doing? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. So he's going to question them because this stuff is making it back in his ears. I mean, isn't that what a concerned father should do, or a concerned mother, go back and question the children? Like, what is going on? What are you doing? You're in a certain position representing the Most High and above all things, and that's the only thing that you should be doing. But anyway, for I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. You make Yahweh's people to transgress. So now we're really opening this thing up. Not only by their actions were they in transgressing, but they brought the people along with them. Again, they used their position, their authority, their title, whatever you want to call it. They were above the people. The people had trusted them because of where they were at, because they knew the history that Yah set Levi apart. And yet, they're causing the people to transgress by use of force or by use of coercion, by use of wrong example. But they lost the fear of the Most High. This is how deep and dire this goes. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against Yahweh, who shall entreat for him? What are you going to say to try to alleviate Yah's judgment if you come against him personally and what he's already prescribed the way he's supposed to be? There is no word. There is no justification before the Most High. Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, but Yahweh. But the Most High, he was going to slay them. He would slay them. again, at this point, why didn't Eli do that was right. He heard the report. He questioned his sons. He knew it was valid, and yet he did nothing further. He was not proactive. He knew his sons were rebellious. They were a list of wicked things, right? They were sons of Belial, but yet at this point, he's got all the information, and he completely failed to act. He's not going to do a damn thing. He's not going to go beyond and prove to the Most High that he's in favor of the Most High in every way, shape, or form, but he's going to allow these children to continue in this wickedness, right? And they're moving the people. They're swaying the people. Okay, 1 Samuel 2:28, All right, 26 and 27 aren't there. We're going to 28. So 1 Samuel 2:28, then through verse 30. So these three verses. And I did choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon mine altar to burn incense, and to wear an ephod before me. And did I give unto it the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire of the children of Israel? So this is being expounded. This reminder is coming back up that this is what you're supposed to do. Didn't I not? Yah saying, I prescribed this in the beginning, you know, and he's taken away every excuse because this has already been laid out clearly for the priesthood. Wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, meaning in my dwelling place, which was the tabernacle, and honorest thy sons above me, to make yourselves fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people. And Yah will not tolerate anybody. Anybody, I don't care who they are, coming before him, making themselves more important and the center, attention and focus other than him. Because he is the all and all. The all center of focus, attention, adoration, reverence, and the list goes on. Again, Eli was a flat-out hypocrite. Yes, he did warn his sons to stop in their wickedness, but why would he leave off from their ways when their father was partaking in the same thing? Meaning that it says now that we find out that all of them were actually committed to this thing. So I don't know if Eli at that point figured out he wouldn't get through it. He might as well just jump in with them. Okay, but anyway, Eli failed to keep Yah first and foremost above his sons. He defiled Yahweh's name and disgraced his position as a priest and a father by compromising on behalf of his sons, and they were all destroyed as a result. Ask yourself, Mom and Dad, do you favor your children over the ways of Yahweh? You really need to ask yourself that question. Are you willing to go the extra mile to stand for Yah and his righteousness, or to compromise on your children's behalf because of a soul tie or logic or reasoning, whatever the case may be? But ask yourself, do you favor your children over the ways of Yahweh? Do you hold your children in higher regard and greater esteem than the King of Kings? Are you also a hypocrite and walk in the spirit of Eli, one of compromise, betrayal, treason, and treachery? You really need to ask yourself them things. Verse 30, wherefore Yahweh of Elohim of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. So this was a promise they had, as long as they didn't breach and bring in sin, transgression, and iniquity. But now Yahweh saith, be it far from me, for them that honor me will I honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. All right, 1 Samuel chapter 4. Verses 15 through 18. We're all finished here with the account of Eli and his two sons. But you can see the progression of the whole thing. Remember, we started out with Samuel and his two sons. Samuel is right. His sons were wrong. And now we got the situation where we have a compromising parent. I mean, Samuel couldn't help in the first illustration about he did that which is right, and he kept doing that which is right. And his sons paid the price because they were wicked. But now we have the father and the two sons are all in this in agreement, and they're all going to pay because the father refused to represent Yah and his righteousness before not only his family but the people, and they were compromised. Again, 1 Samuel chapter 4, 15 through 18. Now Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were dim that he could see. So that's a pretty long age. That's a good age 98 years old, and his eyesight had failed, which, because the body's corrupt, does happen. Anybody, y'all getting older, when you get there, you're going to find that out. It's just you're not going to stop it because the body, the flesh is corrupt. And the man said unto Eli, I am he that came out of the army and fled today out of the army. And he said, what is there done, my son? So you have to go back and read this, but there was a battle, a huge battle. I believe it was with the Philistines. And we're going to find out how this judgment actually played out, okay? And what was the end of not only Eli's sons, that was the punishment. That was they actually got the reward for their iniquity, but Eli as well. And Eli is asking this messenger that came out of the army. He fled from the army. He was a deserter. He came out, and Eli's asking him, so what's going on? Because Eli's an old man. He's sitting there. He can't go to war. He's not physically fit. He's just an old man sitting there waiting for news. So he's asking. He's inquiring. What has been done? What has happened? Please tell me what's happened. And the messenger answered and said, Israel has fled before the Philistines. And there has also been a great slaughter among the people. And thy two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of Yah is taken. I mean, this is devastation, right? I can't imagine what is going through Eli's mind right now. But, you know, this is just absolute devastation in his eyes. This is a complete catastrophe. It's too late now, though. He can't go back and make it right because he didn't do right to begin with. And it came to pass when he made mention of the ark of Yah that he fell from off the seat backward by the side of the gate, talking about Eli, and his neck break, and he died, for he's an old man and heavy, so he's overweight. And his weight, when he fell over backwards, caused him to snap his neck. And he had judged Israel 40 years. So 40 years the people went through, well, you're assuming a good part of that, but, you know, because the sons, I had to believe they had to be, at least age 20 before they get into the priesthood, the real serving. Correct me if I'm wrong, but anyway, but he was the example before all of Israel for a great many number of years, and he poisoned not only him but his sons, and he allowed this poisoning to happen because not only did he refuse to correct his children, but he didn't do nothing about his sorry self and refused to see himself, and this is what happened. All right, one more example, and then we're going to move on. We're going to talk about Hezekiah and his son Manasseh. And again, the illustration is here is that there's a bunch of different facets here. We got, again, parents that compromised and parents that, you know, fathers that didn't compromise and fathers that did. And we're going to find out that, like I said in my bullet points, you may raise your children in a certain way, but we can see by the history of Israel that even the best job that you did and gave them, you were perfect in your love for the Most High and set the best example in the world, that after you're departing, you're no telling what they're going to do. Absolutely no telling what they're going to do. So, I mean, that to me even gives greater understanding why we don't have a succession like we did in the days of the kings. But Yah is the one that raises up whatever man he needs to keep the body preserved, because you never know what the hearts of the children are going to do. It's funny, I mean, we have some brethren in the ministry that were what they call them, PK pastors' kids. And, you know, generally you talk to them, they were just, there was something in them just to be rebellious against all this, the things that their fathers represented, just because of, I think probably a lot of it because of the shame and the questioning that their daddy was a goody two-shoes trying to represent things right. And the children complied, the sons and daughters, because their daddies were in a position of preacher, teacher, whatever the case may be. And then when they got old enough, they rebelled because they were going to show the world that they weren't conditioned or subject to whatever mom and dad said. And I'm just guessing, but it kind of seems to me to be the case. All right, 2 Kings chapter 18, verses 1 through 7. 2 Kings 18, verses 1 through 7. Again, we're giving three different illustrations here. And there's more to be found, but again, I had to try to keep this shorter than I could go 3 hours on this. I'm sure you can understand that, but again, this is just another illustration, real live thing that happened, and bring it out that, you know, the relationship between the children and Yah and the father and Yah and each other can change no matter the upbringing. I mean, upbringing the Most High. Okay, now it came to pass in the third year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel, that Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. So we have the introduction here. Hezekiah, he was a king of Judah. He was the son of Ahaz in the third year of Hoshea. That's begin his rulership, okay? Now let's listen to the character and the history of this man and what he stood for and the principles that he enforced and the example that he set before not only his family but all of Israel to see, right? 25 years old was he begin to reign. I mean, that's pretty young. He's a 25-year-old man, but again, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem, so he's there almost 30 years. His mother's name was also Abai and the daughter of Zechariah. But let's look at how he stood for the Most High and his principles. And he did that which was right in the sight of Yahweh, according to all that David his father did. He removed the high places. Now this man was seriously minded. He set the example for everybody there. This is how we're going to serve Yah. This is the example that I'm going to set because my love for Yah is greater than my love for man. Not that he didn't love man, but the fact of the matter is he's going to prove to Yah that he is going to serve him to the uttermost. So he set the example. And he removed the high places and break down the image and cast down the groves and break in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made. For unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it, and he called it Nehushtan. Now that's incredible because this is something that Yah had told Moshe in the wilderness to construct that actually preserved Israel. And yet this man saw that it had turned into an object of idolatry, and he took this thing that actually preserved Israel at one time, and he destroyed it. He actually was so concerned about Yah and standing up for truth and righteousness that he took this thing and disregard for what it meant at one time and destroyed it because it turned into something that was wicked and evil and the people were turning to it as a god, worshiping it as a god. And he trusted in Yahweh of Israel. He trusted in the Most High of Israel, the Elohim of Israel. He trusted in him so that after him was none like unto him, among all the kings of Judah, nor any that were before him. This man had a reputation. To actually write this down in the book and give this record of him, that's saying something. That is absolutely saying something about this man. To go to the extent and show that he had such a great love of the Most High, not only as a man, but as a father and as a ruler over the people. He wasn't compromising anywhere. For he clave to Yahweh and departed not from following, but kept his commandments which Yahweh had commanded Moshe. And Yahweh was with him because he was obedient. And he prospered because he was obedient to Yah. And he loved the Most High. Whithsoever he went forth, he rebelled against the king of Syria and served him not. Now his King Hezekiah was a man who truly loved the Most High and showed his love towards the Most High by the way he lived and walked. Not only among his family, among his sons and daughters, but among all the people that were under his authority. He displayed the right way to please Yahweh, and his actions tell of his life. So how was he to be blamed for the generations that came behind him, such as his sons and his daughters, in their doings? Did Hezekiah not do that which was needful and necessary as a father to his children? I mean, he was the example. Hezekiah did not fail in setting an example for his seed to follow after him. But nonetheless, all this did not prevent his heir from going against away and away from all his father had taught him and displayed before him all the day of his life. All right, 2 Kings chapter 21, verses 1 through 9. 2 Kings chapter 21, verses 1 through 9. Now we're going to look at the deeds of his son. But don't forget in your mind the upbringing that was afforded to this son, right? He had the example set before him. Okay, Manasseh, that was the son, the next one in line, that was the son of Hezekiah, all right? So Manasseh was 12 years old, and he began to reign, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Hephzibah. So he reigned 12 years old. I mean, that's pretty young to be starting out, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Yahweh after the abominations of the heathen whom Yahweh had cast out before the children of Israel. Okay, and again, I put this in here as a thing that I think you really need to focus on and consider sometimes, because Proverbs 29:2, I mean, this came in my mind some time ago, and I gave it a lot of consideration. Something really jumped off the page at me. But Proverbs 29:2, it's talking about, righteous and wicked rulers. You know, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked beareth to rule, the people mourn. So I begin to think about this, and I'm putting in relationship to what I'm seeing here with the kings in Israel and the kings in Judah, right? And so, but the thing is that I think has failed a lot of times, and this is the concentration, the focus, and the context always seems to point to the king, but it's not. You can't do that. You can't engage a king except through the people. And if you see the people mourning, or you see the people rejoicing, the king may take some credit. He may take some, accolades for whether. Hopefully he don't, just stay humble about it, because he's doing like Hezekiah did, and he just loved Jesus and served him, just loved the Most High and served him. But the thing that is troubling is, as I begin to really think about this, is a lot of times when the people are mourning and you have a wicked ruler over him, a wicked king, somebody in authority, that wicked king will actually look at the people as the problem and say that they're mourning because of their own iniquity. They don't ever consider themselves when they have the people in front of them. That's a scary place to be. And I had never, ever seen it on that wise, and I started to meditate on that after looking more about how these successions took place with the kings of Israel and how it went from one godly, righteous man, one down to one wicked, unjust man. And again, it was all in not looking at the king, but gauging it by the people. And that gives you a much better idea about how those that have the rule of authority over you are actually conducting themselves. I think there's a lot to be said there. All right, continuing on. 2 Kings 21, verse 3. Again, we're talking about Manasseh, who's again, was the son of Hezekiah, his father being a righteous man. He did that which pleased Yahweh. Now we got Manasseh, his seed, had succeeded the throne, and now we're looking at his exploits. For he built up again the high places which Hezekiah, his father, had destroyed. This man intentionally, with purpose, against not only his father and the house that he was brought up in again, I mean, totally dishonor and defame the name of his deceased father and his father's name, but he went up and redid and made evil that which his father worked so hard to make right. And he reared up altars for Baal and made a grove, as did Ahab, king of Israel, and worshipped Baal, the host of heaven, and served them. And he built altars in the house of Yahweh, of which Yahweh said, in Jerusalem will I put my name. So we're getting all these deeds that this wicked man did, in spite of being raised in a righteous, holy, just environment, with a man at the very top setting the example for that family and those people that were subordinate to him. And he made his sons to pass through the fire. I mean, this man went, Manasseh went as low as, he went totally the other way. Absolute 180, right? And observed times and used enchantments and dealt with familiar spirits and wizards. He wrought much wickedness in the sight of Yahweh to provoke him to anger. This son was spoiled. He grew up with the proverbial silver spoon. I mean, he had the riches of his father, whose father was the king in the land. Was raised with the best that life has to offer. He was given, I mean, every excuse that he ever had was taken from him, because he wasn't impoverished. He didn't grow up in dire settings. He had everything afforded to him growing up in this life, that life, I should say. And yet, look at what happened to him. Look at the result of what happened to him. Look at his end. Verse 7, and he set up a graven image of the grove that he had made in his house, of which Yahweh had said to David and to Solomon his son, in this house and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all tribes of Israel, will I put my name forever. This young man, or this king, this ruler, this authority figure, had no regard at all. He was going to put all these abominations right in Yahweh's face. He didn't have any care if he provoked them, didn't concern him, didn't care. Totally a reprobate. but yet he was raised in a righteous and just environment. He said, neither will I make the feet of Israel move any more out of the land which I gave their fathers, only if they will observe to do according to all that I've commanded them and according to all Allah that my servant Moses commanded them. But they hearken not. Okay, 21:9. But they hearken not, and Manasseh seduced them to do more evil than did the nations whom Yahweh destroyed before the children, because he was the authority figure. And the people drew to him because of his position, because of his title, because of where he was at, and because basically they were his slaves. Remember, you go way back to Samuel, and they said, we're going to reject the judges that were there to keep the order and keep the rule, but the people still had the liberty under there. But now they're totally under the rule of this one man in Israel, or in Judah, I should say, and he's going to do whatever he wants, and nobody's going to tell him one way or the other. He has no accountability because he's in the position that he's in. And these people are drawing to us. There had to be some we could see in Ezekiel 9, which is English, but they sighed and cried for the abominations, and Yahweh went through. I think I'm going to talk about that too, but I'll get to that. So anyway, but they hearken not. Manasseh seduced them to do more evil than did the nations whom Yahweh destroyed before the children of Israel. All right, so we have these three accounts. We're going to move on. But I think you get the context. I hope I've been clear enough, at least up to this point, about what it means to be a righteous father, mother, and not knowing how your children are going to react, even being raised up in a righteous environment. Or you have the other foot where you have wicked children because the parent was wicked and they're compromising. And they didn't do that which is right to correct the situation and it brought the whole house down. So we've gotten up to that point, okay? So now we're going to go into the Torah, Deuteronomy chapter 21, Deuteronomy 21, 19 through 21. I mean, if there's any story that you can read on how to be right before the Most High, or account or something written in the Torah about how to handle the situation, and this is a real situation. I mean, there's a lot said in what I'm about to read here, way beyond just what's in the Word here. I mean, it goes beyond that, but okay, here we go. Deuteronomy 21, start of verses 19 going to 21. And go back and read the whole story in context. But there was a situation that came up between a mother and father and their son. And this is what the judgment was. Then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him out of the elders of the city and unto the gate. And they shall say unto the elders of the city, this is our son, he's stubborn, he's rebellious, so they recognize the wickedness in him. They can bring it to the authority and say, look, this is what we're dealing with, right? He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Again, this son has no desire to listen, has zero self-control or concern towards the things that satisfy his lusts. He's going to do whatever the hell he wants. He don't matter. He's in total rebellion against his mother and his father. He is a disgrace and embarrassment to his family and has proven he is unwilling to receive correction or be corrected. So they're going by what the Torah instructs them to do. They're not going to spare him because of a soul tie or whatever, but they're going to put the mandates and the commands of the Most High above all things, even though how painful this is. And again, that's what I was talking about, compromising parents. And this is one situation where you see a lot of times parents will be tested, mothers and fathers will be tested with this, and they will actually try to do whatever they can do to preserve a rebellious, wicked child. They will do whatever they can and keep hoping that at some point they're going to reform their wicked son or daughter when it isn't in their heart. But we can see now, we can see the course that was spoken of and charted by the Most High as far as it's coming to do with this type of insurrection right in the household. Deuteronomy 21:21, and all the men of cities, all the men of his city shall stone him with stones that he shall die. So shalt thou put away the evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. The word calls this evil. It's made known that the stubborn, rebellious behavior, he's a glutton and a drunkard, and I'm sure there's a host of other things, but these are the primary things that they could identify working in this rebellious son, this offspring, the seed of this mother and father, right? The word calls this evil something that is cancerous to the family and the body. It's destructive and must be removed by what But what of you compromising fathers and mothers? What of your disobedience to do that which is necessary to righteously represent the kingdom and the rule of law? To preserve and strengthen those other siblings and children, show yourself as true examples of standing for holiness no matter the pain and suffering of the soul it will bring. And that's the test. That is the test. What you bought, what you see on the, can you imagine watching the seed that the father that he birthed out of his loins and the mother gave birth to, and they get to the age where they can't control this son anymore, and they actually have to do what the command says because they know this is a cancer, and to commit their son life into the rule and command that was already put out there, and that being stoned to death. I mean, I'm telling you, that'd be a hard, I don't care how much you try to disconnect yourself with your children, if it came to that nowadays. Yeah, but of course we can't do that on the physical no more, but there's a spiritual level there as well. And because we don't see that judgment immediately, and because it doesn't exist, because we're not in our own land, doesn't mean you shouldn't follow the same type of intensity with being familiar what this means and the implications behind it. That's the whole point. You shouldn't let it fade because we're not going to go out and stone. You know, Israel's not going to stone, parents aren't going to stone their own children because they're acting like this, right? But the care and concern for the Most High and His commandments and keeping the assembly without spot or blemish should be the forefront of your mind. And I'm going to bring this up as it keeps in mind. I don't have any children. I haven't raised children for quite a few years, right? But I did. And even back as a Gentile, I was very strict with my children. I didn't let them get away with nothing. And they got stories they can tell you. I was actually, in today's standards, some people might consider, and I was actually accused of being abusive, though I wasn't going to beat the hell out of him or punch him or none of that crap, right? But I was stern as a father because I could see that the world they were entering to, even back then, and the wickedness, and I was doing everything I could to make sure that I was on top of everything that they were doing all the time. In fact, I had my children so well understanding my position as a father and their position as a mother that if we were out and about in public and they were cutting up, all you had to do is look at them, just stare at them, and they stopped instantly. I didn't even have the need for a rod. I didn't have the need for a belt. And I'm going to talk about that later too. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but so I do have some familiarity. It's not that I'm not without any type of right. Plus, and the other half too is that most of you know my story. I was tested on my love for my children and my love for Yah, and I chose my love for Yah over my children. Did it hurt? Hurt like hell. I mean, it's painful. But my son loved me enough. I just got back from his wedding last week. He wanted me there. He invited me personally, Dad, I want you there. And then he thanked me time and time again for just being there for him, right? And, of course, there's a whole other story behind that with a lot went on, but he had enough honor for me and showed me enough honor all the days that he was growing up. And I count that as something. So anyway, Mark chapter 13, verses 9 through 12. And again, we're going to go through the admonishments here. We just started out with in Deuteronomy about how to deal with a cancerous son or daughter. In this case, it was a son. But what was required of mother and father first and foremost? It fell on them to make the decision. Now we're going to go to the words of our Messiah. And Yahshua said in Mark chapter 30, starting verse 9, "But take heed to yourselves, for they shall deliver you up to councils, and in the synagogue shall you be beaten, and you shall be brought before rulers and kings for my sake for a testimony against them." Who's against them? The testimony, but those that shall deliver you up to the councils. Somebody's going to turn on you, and there's coming a time where there's going to be mass betrayal. And Yahshua was already way back then, 2,000 years ago, was warning the people then because it happened then, and nothing new under the sun. We're going to see that same thing here again. And this message must first be published among all nations. But when they shall lead you and deliver you up, take no thought beforehand of what you shall speak, neither do you premeditate. But whatsoever shall be given you in that hour, that speak ye, for it is not you that speak, but the Holy Spirit. The Ruach HaKodesh that is speaking. So just yield yourself to Yah, even though you know what's going on in front of you. You're in a place where you're probably going to lose your life, but let the Yahweh testify against those that betrayed you and those that you've been delivered to, because those words can't be refuted, and they're going to go down as a testimony against those that do such things. Verse 12, now the brother shall betray. It's not a question of if, just a question of when this is going to happen. And in some countries and other places of the world, they're already doing. We have, you know, all kind of stuff. If you actually watch the news and know what's going on in these end times, that you know, it's promoted to spy on one another, to spy on your neighbors, you know, the children turning the parents for, if they're looking like they're abusive, they don't tolerate you wanting to do a gender change or anything like that. It's actually being conditioned in them, these children, to rebel. So this is very easy to say how this is going to come to pass, even in a greater measure, especially in this country. Now the brother shall betray the brother to death, and the father the son, and children shall rise up against their parents and shall cause them to be put to death. How many instances have we heard of or know of where the children in Israelite families either called the authorities on their parents or they threatened to do so? And yet these parents seek to reason with such threats as this. These children that rise up against their parents shall cause the death of their parents. Turn them over to the authorities of this world. This is where we are headed. And we can be assured that Satan is going to dial up his attacks against our children, as they are the most impressionable in mind and easier to be lied to in their minds. And he's going to use this, and they're being, I mean, that's why it's been said and so many times over and over again, and Pastor Dahl has been saying from the beginning and herald it from every avenue he can, but come out of her, my people, because that's the instruction in the book. And that's a must if you want to actually avoid a lot of this. But when you stay connected to the world, especially, or you allow the world to come into your home or whatever the case may be through whatever avenue it is, I mean, you're actually allowing these children the ability to be influenced more and more by Satan. And, you know, fathers and mothers, do their best. I believe that everybody truly does their best to do what's right and make sure that the children are raised in the way of, but you know, sometimes you have to ask yourself, is there more? And again, I can't put myself and condemn any parent from doing what they're doing now and the way they raise their children, because Israelite parents, because I would say that maybe I would do this with mine or that, but again, times are different when I was growing up. We didn't have the challenges of computers and internet and all that stuff. That was like absolutely not even a thought back then. But we're here today, so you have a lot more things to consider as parents, about as fathers and mothers, about you know, what your children have access to. All right, Matthew chapter 10, verses 34 through 35, 39. Matthew chapter 10, 34 through 39. Yeshua says, Messiah says, think not that I am come to send peace on earth. Don't think about it for a minute. That's not what I came here for. I came here for some specific reasons, and this is one of them. And again, he talks about in John that he came to expose the workings of Satan. And here we have another reason. Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, to make but a sword. He didn't come to get everybody all kumbaya, to allow everybody to compromise, to allow everybody to make their own logic and reasoning. No, he came for a sword for a purpose, and he came to, because he knows, to sever the wicked amongst the just, the just from the wicked, and to test the hearts of all men. That's what Yah does. He tests your hearts to prove you, to see whether you actually be with him or just saying it in lip service. Verse 35, For I am come to set a man at variance. I mean, this was a purposeful act. This was something that was intentful. And you know, Messiah was just warning us. I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And the word variance just simply means to cleave asunder, to sever. So for I am come to sever a father and his daughter, a daughter and the mother, the daughter-in-law against the mother-in-law. In fact, all aspects of the family. I've actually come because that's what a sword do. It cuts. Okay, in verse 36. And a man's foe shall be the heir of her own household. So you're going to find out that when this is going on, he's warning you that if you don't allow this severing to take place, if you try to hold on to the thing that you're warned against that Yahshua is trying to do to save you, you're going to find out the foes are going to rise up against you. He's trying to preserve you even from the beginning. And that's the decision you have to make and the ability that you have to see. I mean, Elder Kabir has got one of the most, let's quote, famous accounts and stories in the ministry about what went the betrayal that happened to him by his ex-wife. And he can tell you time and time again, if there's any man that has made it known the battles that took place to him personally, you know, he had, what, 7 children, I think, and what happened to him. And he had a strong soul tie and was trying to be a great example as a father to him, and look what happened to him. But he had to make that choice, and now his testimony is greater than it's ever been because he allowed the words of Messiah to actually enter in his heart. Even though they were painful, he followed through, and now he's been rewarded. We have more than one instance of wicked children who, wanting to fill up their lust after the man of the world, lifted up their heads in rebellion and betrayed their entire family in the hands of civil authorities of this world. Children who heard the words of truth, children who lived the book, were trained in the ways of the Most High, and yet they turned on their father and mother in their rage against the authority and didn't concern themselves at all with the fallout. These fathers and mothers are now written into the system, a tyrannical institution, and remain at the mercy of these agencies for his lifetime, all because of one wicked child, and more so, refusing to actually, waiting for something to change, waiting for something to change. I understand, believe me. I'm not being cold, and it's just simply an admonition here that the time is coming that these children are being more influenced than any other time in our period. And we have to really reflect on the words that have been spoken to us. So if it looks like they're going to take the whole ship down, then you get rid of the one wanting to take the ship down. I mean, that's just a choice you have to make because your duty is the preservation of them that still are in the will of the Most High. I mean, who is my father, my mother, my son, my daughter? Again, they that do the will of the Most High. I know at an early age it's more difficult, but when they get up to an age where a lot of times they'll demand that this is what they want to do. Well, don't try to talk them out of it, because the more you resist them and the evil working in them, the more the probability is that they're going to betray you. That's just a fact. Let's hope it doesn't happen, but we've already seen the example thus far. Okay, verse 37. He that loveth father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. He that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. So it's a question of worth. How are you worthy? What are you willing to walk away from? What are you willing to sacrifice? Who are you willing to hold to? I mean, Messiah's words are pretty concise and clear. He came intentionally to send a sword. That was for your benefit, because he needs you to help save you. You're the one that's called and chosen, not your mom or not your... I come from a household of 9. I have my mother and father and 7 children. And I don't know why, but Yah chose me, and I wasn't going to look back from that day forward. He picked me. It's amazing and marvelous in my eyes, because I don't consider myself anything, even sitting here, and that's the truth. But he did, and that in itself is just, it'll give you a headache even trying to consider that, the depth of that. It really should. Clearly, Jesus is speaking in terms of testing where one's heart is at. Would a man forsake all that he has, all that surrounds him and that he cares for, loves and cherishes and follows the King of Kings, no matter how painful things become? Following Yahweh is designed to pull you out of your comfort zone. Having something severed, quote, severed or cut into two parts indeed requires an instrument that will cause pain by the sheer act of its function. We often equate these words of Jesus as the actions that would happen when one comes to the knowledge of the truth and born into Israel, and there is no need to remove them away from those things that would cause them to compromise their soul. But this also is the case of those who are actually Israel. It might actually be the case. When Messiah spoke of these words, he was not addressing the Gentile peoples, but to Israel. And he came only for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So I'm just keeping in context. He was warning the people that he went to, the house of Israel at that time, that even amongst them, that he was going to do this. And it came by the message of truth. And when Yah called somebody, he opened up their understanding, a mother or father, and they had that choice at that time. Are they going to just walk away from that stuff and follow him? They can allow that sword to cut and sever that relationship, or are they going to try to hold fast to it, hang on to it, and hoping that the Most High understands that this is something that they need to do for them? No, he doesn't work like that. Okay, verse 38. And he that taketh not his stake and followeth after me is not worthy of me, and he that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth life for my sake shall find it. All right, Proverbs chapter 30, verse 11. I'm going to try to speed it up a little bit here. I figured it was going to be 2 hours, so bear with me, please. Okay, Proverbs chapter 30, verse 11 and 12. No, 11 through 14. Proverbs chapter 30, 11 through 14. This is a prophecy that was spoken, I believe, by Solomon. You can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but we knew this was coming. Okay, there is a generation that curseth. Means they have contempt for, they despise, they have dishonor for their father, and does not bless or does not praise or salute their mother. Total disregard. There is a generation that will do this. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes, and yet is not washed from their own filthiness. They're so educated, so knowledgeable, even at a young age, that they can tell you what's right and wrong. They've assumed for themselves, either by what they've heard, what they've been allowed to see, what they've been allowed to absorb, that they come to this conclusion that they're better than even their mother and father. They're pure in their own eyes, and yet they can't see to be washed from their filthiness. Again, this generation has no idea how bad their condition is, are completely blinded by their own deceivings. This generation, there is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. Now we're finding the principal culprit here. And it's just something that's been around since the beginning when Lucifer lifted himself up in pride and said, I will ascend up to the heavens above the throne of the Most High. Full of pride, heady, high-minded, who no longer can be corrected or instructed. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords and their jaw teeth as knives to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy men from among men. All that is in their mouths. Everything they speak is destruction. All that is in their mind is wickedness. That's this generation. I think the generation we're in today. And gratefully, especially beyond community, the benefit of it is a great many of the children are shielded from this. And that is such a blessing and such a beautiful thing. And I know the parents that, Israelite parents, their mother, their fathers and mothers that, you know, are in on communities, I have to trust that they're doing the best as well to shield their children from a lot of this. Because that is your duty, to allow them to absorb a lot of this would actually be putting them yourself in a compromising position and actually affording the enemy more room. Now, if they're going to get a hold of it, they're going to get a hold of it. But they're going to have to do it against your instruction so you can stand righteous before the Most High. Ezekiel chapter 14, Ezekiel 14, 12 through, this is pretty lengthy, 12 through, let me see. 23. Ezekiel 14, 12 through 23. We'll go through this one a little quicker. And the word of Yahweh came again to me, saying, Son of man, when the land sinneth against me by trespassing grievously, then I will stretch out my hand upon it and will break the staff of bread thereof, and I will send famine upon it and will cut off man and beast. So what is going on that's going to provoke Yahweh's judgment? Because the land, or the people that they're inhabiting the land, have trespassed to a point of, it's just grieved the Most High. They're absolutely grieved by it. He's grieved by it, excuse me. But we're going to look at the character of what's going on in the midst of what's going on in this land, full of great transgressions, great trespassing, sin and iniquity, and Yah's judgment about it. Now, here comes the preservation. Though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they should deliver but their own souls, but by by their righteousness, saith Yahweh the Elohim, meaning the righteousness of Yahweh, representing him standing on his laws, statutes, and commandments, not compromising, not going left or right, not being in the gray area, but standing firm on the word of Yah no matter what happens. If a noisome beast passed through the land, all these tests are coming, all these trials, all these things, the land's going to get spoiled, it's going to go into a famine, the beasts are going to rise up and do things that are contrary, and all these tests are coming, but yet these three men, the men that we know about, were righteous and loved the Most High and had a life dedicated to him, even though they were tested greatly. Noah, Job, Daniel, and Job. Again, if noisome beasts pass through the land and they spoil it so that it be desolate, that no man may pass through because of the beast, these three men were in it. They were actually amongst it. They witnessed it. They partook, I didn't partake of it, but they saw the deeds. They saw the abominations. They saw the happenings, right? And that inspired them more to fear the Most High and draw closer to him. As I live, saith Yahweh Elohim, they shall deliver neither sons nor daughters. They only shall be delivered, but the land shall be desolate. They're not, they understand that you can't stop and put your focus. It has to be because salvation is a personal thing, right? And if they turn like Lot did to, or Lot's wife did to, back to the city and the things of the city. Now the daughters obeyed the father and they were preserved getting out of the city. But we have a situation here that these men knew that the righteousness they had, they may have taught it to their sons and daughters, but they're hoping that the sons and daughters did enough and received enough and walked that example that their parent, their fathers and mothers gave, that they too would be able to be preserved from this, that these great transgressions caused among the people. Or if I bring a sword upon that land and say, sword, go through the land so that I cut off man and beast from it. Though these three men were in it, as I live, saith Yahweh Elohim, they shall deliver neither sons nor daughters, but they only shall be delivered themselves. I mean, they're not going to go back. They're not going to compromise. They're not going to make excuse. They're not going to let a soul tie damn them because they're trying to save possibly some children that were disobedient or whatever the case, their heart wasn't geared towards the Most High. There's another choice and test to be made, but they're going to make the choice on the side of the Most High. Or if I send a pestilence in that land and pour out my fury upon it in blood to cut off from man and beast, and all this stuff is happening, and they're probably seeing the suffering that's going on in their families. They're probably seeing that the children are starving. They're, who knows, their aunts or uncles, right? People they grew up with, they love. But yet their mindset is they're going to save themselves by all the righteousness that they exercise their whole life. They're not going to go to left or right. Again, verse 20, though Noah, Daniel, and Job were in it, as I live, saith Yah, they shall deliver neither son nor daughter, but they shall deliver their own souls by their righteousness. For thus saith Yahweh Elohim, how much more when I send my four sword, how much worse is this going to get? My sword, four sword judgments upon Jerusalem, the sword, the famine, and noisome beasts and pestilence to cut from it man and beast. Yet behold, therein shall be a remnant that shall be brought forth. Who is going to be responsible for this remnant being brought forth? That's the Most High's doing. That's absolutely his doing. And nothing is new under the sun. And that what you've seen, we know about that, what he's going to do again. And we have the story here to see the perseverance of these three men and their example and what it took for them, right, to make it to be included in the remnant. Yet behold, therein shall be left a remnant that shall be brought forth, both sons and daughters. Behold, they shall come forth unto you, and you shall see their way and their doings. Again, so the example is these sons and daughters can be included in the remnant. I mean, Yah knows those that he's called and chosen. He knows those that he hasn't. But it still doesn't negate the fact that you have to, as a father and mother, represent Yah in the righteousness that he demands. So so these children don't have any excuse going forward that they didn't know his ways. You have to totally remove that. So you have to be the best example in the fear of the Most High that you possibly can. And these three men were named because that's exactly what they were. Okay, behold, they shall come forth unto you, and you shall see their way and their doings. You shall be comforted concerning the evil or the judgment that I have brought upon Jerusalem, even concerning all that I have brought upon it. And they shall comfort you when you see their ways and their doings, and you shall know that I have not done without cause all that I have done, it saith Yahweh the Elohim, because he had a reason to do it, because the land was sinning greatly. That's why, you know, Pastor said, and he said it for years, we don't tolerate sin. We can't allow it to flourish, and we can't, because if it infects one, the cancer will spread. That's why we are so adamant in here, not first and foremost about being loyal to the Most High and standing up for him, but secondly, all being in unity against sin. You have to, because you can't give any room for it to flourish. All right, John chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. John chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. I hope you all hang with me. I know this is a lot of content, and I really truly hope that it's making some resemblance of sense. I really truly do. In fact, that's my hope every time I sit down behind this mic, that I speak clearly enough that it can be heard. That is my hope in the Most High. All right. John chapter 3, 1 through, again, where are we at? 1 through 8. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Judeans. The same came to Yeshua by night and said unto him, Rabbi, or teacher, master, we know that thou art a teacher come from Yah, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except Yah be with him. So Nicodemus is there. He's actually an Israelite. And he recognizes the greatness that's in Messiah, and he's putting that out there. He actually understands, at least to a degree, who what place this man has standing before him. But he's seeking an answer to something, right? Yeshua answered and said unto him, remember, he asked the question, for no man can, okay. This man came to Yeshua, and I said, Rabbi, we know that art a teacher come from Yah. No man can do these miracles without doest except Yah be with him. So this is how Jesus is going to answer Nicodemus, right? He can answer him 100 different ways, but look at the focus that he is telling Nicodemus is how I am able to do these things because I am born of Yah. I come from Yah. I'm begat from the Most High. And he's going to represent all the people too as well that are going to go through this process, right? So he's reminding, he's trying to expose to Nicodemus what it takes to be able to do the miracles and knowing that Yah is with them, that the kingdom is within them. So he's going to explain it to Nicodemus. This is a learned man. And Yeshua answered and said, I'm truly, truly, verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born, which means converted or made new again, he cannot see the kingdom of Yah. Now, is Messiah speaking to only those who are without, not of Israel, but have been called and chosen to inherit eternal life. Remember, Messiah spoke these words when he was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But we found out later in the book that this applies to all men to whom the Master calls. Born an Israelite by birth does not give that son or daughter the birthright to enter into the kingdom. And we're going to show why. Ask yourself how many Israelites that you've read that you actually believe they've inherited eternal life because of who they were by birth. Ask yourself that. I mean, you really need to ask yourself that. Did their sins follow them to the grave? I mean, sometimes some we can suspect, maybe some did. We don't know the answer to all that, but you need to ask yourself this. And the point was is that a lot of times this verse is read and it automatically goes to the Gentiles. I don't think it ever is considered amongst those that are already Israel, Israelite father and mother with Israelite children. That's the point I'm trying to make here. But this is not an exception thing. This is for everybody. And Nicodemus saith unto him, how can a man be born when he is old? Can he enter a second time into his mother's womb and be born? So he's perplexed. He's trying to get more answers to the things that he just heard because he is not clear. He's using his carnal logic, his mental state to try to answer something that's spiritual. And Yeshua answered, verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born of water and of spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of Yah. Are we to believe that there is any exception to this fact, this truth, as if it only applies to those who were not Israel, but being born again or renewed again, have been added to Israel and does not also speak of those born in Israel? No, that this rule is for everybody. I'm talking about your seed as well. They can learn the law, statutes, and commandments, but they can't skip this part. They must be born of water and of the Spirit, meaning baptism, and have received the baptism of the Ruach HaKodesh. And without the Spirit of Yah, they are none of His. And that there is no exemption. Just because their seed, Israelite born, doesn't mean they can skip this process. And he goes on to say in verse 6, that which is born of flesh is flesh. No matter where you come from, it's still flesh. At the end of the day, that's all that's seen. It's still flesh. There has to be a conversion that takes place. And that which is born of spirit is spirit. Why do we generally apply these words to those who are coming out of the world, those who were not Israel but becoming Israel by being grafted in? Why could we not apply these words also to those who are actually Israelites, already converted and in the truth? That which is born of flesh is flesh, no matter the heritage, no matter the background. All who will be allowed to enter in the kingdom of Yah must be born of the water and of the Holy Spirit, no exceptions. Again, the emphasis is that those born of a woman are born of flesh, no matter the heritage or ethnic background, and they must be born of the Spirit to have the right to be called the sons of Yah. Again, verse 7, Jesus said, marvel not that I said unto thee, you must be born again. Don't marvel about it. It's not that, I understand it, because he's saying to somebody that's already Israel, but he's saying that you have to do something else now to actually inherit the kingdom and come into the love of the truth. Yahshua goes on to say, the wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound there, but canst not tell whence it cometh and whither it goeth, so is everyone that born of the Spirit. All right, Ezekiel chapter 9, verses 1 through 11. We're getting there. It's going to be a full 2 hours, so bear with me. Again, Ezekiel chapter 9, verses 1 through 11. All right, the words of Ezekiel. He cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And remember this account, because we're going to see this happen again. You'll find these same acts going to happen in Revelation chapter 7, but that's for another topic. And behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lieth toward the north, and every man a slaughter weapon in his hand. And one man among them was clothed with linen, with a writer's inkhorn by his side, and they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. So we're getting a picture of what's going on here, that these six men with the destroying weapons to mean destruction, are being sent from the Most High to this city, right? Verse 3. And the glory of Yah of Israel was gone up from the cherub, whereupon he was, to the threshold of the house, and he called the man clothed with linen, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And he said unto him, now he's going to give him a task before Yahweh judges this place, right? Because of their deeds, their iniquities, their sins, their transgressions, because they've turned their back on the Most High. And he includes all of them. We're going to find out he is not going to be exclusionary. It's for all. And he called on the man clothed with linen, which had writer's inkhorn by his side. And he said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. Okay, where are these brothers and sisters today, in this present day and hour? Do any exist? Should any such saints be among us? Do we believe that there is no wickedness and abominable acts being perpetrated in this day and hour? Or are there some which we can see and discern things which are out of order and not place and sigh and cry out of the Master's host? I mean, you have to be spiritually discerning and not always be looking. Nobody wants to look for evil and wickedness, but if you get a check in your spirit about something, you better do what you need to do to make sure that that check is there to, first and foremost, get you to, you may not understand fully, but to seek the Most High in prayer. And when he gives it to you, when he shows you more, then it might lead you to the point where you're going to have to sigh and cry for what isn't right or wasn't correct, or the order is out of balance. You know, abominations, I don't think we're going to go to that extent, at least not here. But again, you know, there may be something that isn't being performed like it should be. But anyway, the point is that this writer with the inkhorn, he went out and he did something first, which he put a seal. He marked these people in their forehead, the ones that had the desire, the love for the Most High, were crying out for what they saw, what they knew to be the truth, what they knew was happening spiritually. They could see it, even though the other people may have been blinded to it. They were given the knowledge of it, and they did the best thing that they could, because the greatest person amongst us are those that are in their prayer closets, going to war day and night, and they should get a great reward in Shemayim. Even though they're not noticed or not counted so often, they have a great reward because they're in constant intercession and prayer for the saints, for the benefit of the body, and to intercede for the Most High for His mercies. I mean, I can't think of anybody that is more deserving than the prayer warriors. I really can't. All right, he said, all right, verse 5. And to the others he said in mine hearing, go after him through the city and smite, let not your eyes spared, neither have any pity. So we've marked these people, the ones that are actually showing themselves faithful and disgusted, and by whatever words you want to use, verb you want to use, that for what's going on in the land that they can see, right? And the Most High already knows where their heart is at, so He's going to make sure that they're protected. But this is what He's going to do now. So He said, go after him to the city and smite, let not your eyes spare, neither have pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children. He's not going to, just because it's a little child, Yah isn't, He's not going to hold back. He's righteous. I mean, He's just righteous down to the T. And women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary, then they begin at the ancient men which were before the house. Again, who shall escape Yahweh's judgment? Does He allow preferential treatment based on age or gender? Does He allow sin to continue unchecked, wickedness to remain without punishment? The price that's seemingly innocent, such as would be often credited to children, are paying so often because of the failures of the fathers and mothers. The aged men and women among the youth which failed to set a righteous example, which failed to esteem Yahweh first and promote Him above all things. Boy, sometimes I write my notes and I can't. Oh, help me, Jesus. Anyway, I hope that made sense. Verse 7. And He said unto them, defile the house and fill the courts with the slain. Go ye forth. I'm going to show an example of my anger is what He's saying. And they went forth and slew in the city. Verse 8, and it came to pass while they were slaying them, and I was left, that they fell upon my face and cried, said, ah, Yahweh, the Elohim, they're just like, what is going on? What are you going to stop? Oh, my Yah, your anger is poured out, and these people are in agony, and they're like, ah, my Lord, they're crying out. Wilt thou destroy all the residue of Israel in thy pouring out of thy fury upon Jerusalem? And he said unto me, the iniquity, this is the prophet crying out and trying to intercede, because you don't see as Yah sees, and he's doing what he can too to cry out to help spare, and hopefully Yah will withhold his hand a little bit, but Yah hates sin and iniquity and wickedness. And he said unto me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceeding great. The land is full of blood and the city full of perverseness, for they say the Yahweh hath forsaken the earth, and Yahweh seeth not. So they walk totally in the blindness of their own hearts and minds, refusing to believe that they're ever going to be judged, and just going on with things as usual, right? As for me also, mine eyes shall not spare, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense the way upon their head. Now we are getting a front row seat into the mind of Yahweh, how He has zero tolerance for sin and wickedness, and will take action against such deeds, and will leave an impression for the next generation to consider. Again, why do fathers and mothers not have the same approach to sin and wickedness with their children as the Father of Lights has towards His children when they continue in transgression? Yahweh did not spare, neither did He have pity upon His children, but dealt with them according to their ways and doings. Why do fathers and mothers today hold back, fail to discipline and correct their children, and spare them in their folly? Why do fathers and mothers today reserve punishment and discipline, instead look upon their children with pity while the children remain in their wickedness? That's a compromising stance, and it shouldn't be tolerated, because all that's going to happen, and things are definitely going to get worse, not better. And behold, the man clothed with linen, which had an inkhorn by his side, reported the matter, saying, I have done as thou hast commanded me. So he finished his part. All right, Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verses 11 through 13. 11 through 13. Again, this is just kind of filling in behind what we just read in Ezekiel. Excuse me. Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Simply meaning that because if correction isn't made instantly and on the spot, and discipline is not withheld, any form of correction or admonishment, and it's allowed to flourish, then because it's not brought to the attention, especially when you deal with children, because a lot of times they don't even have an understanding. They do have an understanding what they're doing a lot of times. I mean, I've known them from an early age, you know, 1 or 2 years of age, that sometimes even younger, they know what the difference between yes and no, especially no, that they get a lot more no when they're young than they do yes, because correction has to be right from the start. But if nothing is enacted upon or nothing is called out, but you just kind of like, I'm tired, I don't really want to deal with it, that kind of thing. And I know I've been there before. Believe me, I'm not condemning anybody for anything. I'm just trying to be real with this. And then it's allowed to continue, it'll perpetuate, and only because when, you know, how it is with anything, if you give a misdeed an inch, it can grow into a mile, right? And it can continue and give more boldness. I mean, you watch children, right? I got, you know, a quick story, and I don't want to get too far off track, but my son, when he was like 4 years old, 5 years old, right, we were on a cookout with some friends, and we had one of these Weber pot belly type of grills going, right? And I'm sitting there, I'm relaxing, I'm sipping a beer, and we got food going on the grill, and lounging in my chair, you know, just doing what you did when you were Gentiles, right? And I'm watching my son, he's about five, and he keeps eyeing up that Weber grill, right? And he started walking up to it, get close, and I said, no, I started knowing. He know I meant no when he know. And so after a while, he keep looking at it. He's looking at it again. And my wife then, Carol's laying right there in the recliner next to me, and we're both watching this, and I said, watch, he's going to do it again. Look at him. So he starts walking up there again, and he wants to touch this grill. And I keep saying, no. Don't touch it. You're going to burn yourself, right? He knows what heat is, believe me. And so he walked away, and he's still looking over his shoulder at this grill. And I told her, I said, okay, we had a cooler right there. I said, get a Ziploc bag and fill it full of ice. And she's like, why? Just get a Ziploc bag and full of ice. The last time, I didn't warn him. I just let him walk up to it, and he put the palm of his whole hand on the bottom of that Weber grill. And I didn't boohoo him. I started getting on him. Didn't I tell you? I said no. How many times did I say no? And, you know, and of course he's bawling because his hand's burning. And, of course, you know, Carol's pissed at me because I allowed it to happen. And it looked kind of like abusive, but he had to learn the lesson. And he never did it again. I got his attention. And, of course, he went with the ice and put it on his hand. And he got some relief by that. It wasn't that bad. Right, he touched it in the heat, but it was enough to leave an image, an impression on his mind. But that's what I'm talking about. It's because this is allowed to continue and there's nothing done, or at least no attention drawn to an evil work or a supposing wicked way or something, it's going to continue until it gets its end accomplished. All right, verse 12. Though a sinner do evil 100 times and his days be prolonged, yet surely I know that it will be well with them that fear Yahweh, which fear before him. Again, meaning that by inaction and failure to deal with wickedness and sin, men will allow themselves to continue in such actions, either deceiving themselves that they are doing no wrong, or that knowing that they are doing wrong and there is no swift action taken against such favor, that they will continue as there's no objection to it. There's nothing like stopping them from continuing to do it. The same with your children. Verse 13. But it shall be well, not be well with the wicked, neither shall be he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he feareth not Yahweh. Again, this goes back to the fear of the Most High. That's going to be your governor. All right, Acts chapter 2, verse 37. We're getting down there, saints. We're getting there. Acts chapter 2, verse 37. Through 47. So these 10 verses. All right, Acts chapter, starting verse 37. Now when they heard this, they were pricked in their heart and said unto Peter and to the rest of the apostles, men and brethren, what shall we do? So they saw these examples. Go back and read all Acts chapter 2. It's, of course, the day of Pentecost when the Ruach was poured out. And they saw these things. These men were convicted. They were pricked in their hearts. What can we do? What shall we do? What do we need to do to be right and to walk in the demonstration we just saw, right? And Peter said unto them, repent and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Yahshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Christ, for the remission of sins, and you shall receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. For this promise is unto you and to your children, and to all that are far off, even as many as Yahweh Elohim shall call. The promise only goes to the ones whom Yahweh calls, and that isn't to everyone. So that might be among your children. But it's still your duty to raise them in the law, statute, and commandment in the right ways. It only goes to the ones to which Yahweh will call. And with many other words did he testify and exhort, saying, save yourselves from this untoward, or this crooked, perverse, and unfair generation. Then they were gladly received his word, were baptized. Well, that's the first step. That which is born is flesh is flesh. Again, but now you see the conversion taking place. You must be born of the water and of the Spirit. And we're seeing it played out right here. Talking about this promise is ordered, also ordered, allowed to the sons and daughters provided they're called. And they gladly received his word, were baptized, and the same day there were added unto them 3,000 souls. All now, that's staggering, but that's okay. 3,000 souls were added in that selfsame day, not by birth or by natural born status, but by the word being ministered to them, to all those nations that were represented on the day when the Holy Spirit was poured out. And this is still how Yahweh is doing this today. He has ordained men to minister and to preach the message of the truth of the kingdom to all those whom he calls, and they will hear. He's going to open up their understanding. It's what happens after that. Many are called, few are chosen, but the fact is that many are still called, and these are the ones they're going to hear. Again, I came out of a family of 9 people, and I'm the only one that was given the ability, for whatever reason, the mercy to hear and be chosen. I can't even tell you how thankful I am. Jesus, thank you, Father. Verse 42, and they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, fellowship, and the breaking of bread, and in prayers. And fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done by the apostles. And all that believed were together. They were all together, all in union, they were in oneness. And had all things common, and sold the possessions and goods, and parted them to all men, as every man had need. And they continued daily, and continuing daily with one accord in the temple, and breaking bread from house to house, did they eat their meat with gladness and singing of his heart, praising Yah and having favor with all the people. And Yahweh added to the assembly daily such as should be saved. It was by his doing that people were added to the assembly, strictly by his doing. He had men that were out there ministering, like Pastor Dallas Manon. I think, you know, when Yah told him it, after first and second admonition, you need to get on YouTube and on the internet, and that's how his voice was made known. Yah's voice, his word, being spoken by a willing vessel, Pastor Dow, and that's how these people heard. But it was Yah drawing them, and it was him adding them to the assembly, such as should be saved, provided they do the entire walk. Yahweh added daily to the assembly such as should be saved, not so much as added those who were born into this life. As this is no different today than when it was then, as Yahweh was calling to those who were called into this adoption of its salvation and eternal life through the preaching of his word to the nations, to those who have ears to hear, eyes to see, and hearts to perceive. Children are not washed by birthright, but rather by the washing of the word and of the truth. No man has access to the Father except through Messiah. All right, 1 Corinthians 7, verses 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 12 through 16. But the rest speak I, not Yahweh. If any man have a wife that believeth not, and she be pleased to dwell with him, let him not put her away. You know, because he wants to keep the unity. You know, Yah don't want to see households separated. I mean, those that are in the truth. Even though he did come to send the sword, but I mean, I'm talking about those that are if they can, if an unbeliever can remain with a believer and walk in the same state, then please do by all means, because you actually might gain, be able to gain the unbeliever if Yahweh is dealing with them. But the rest speak I, not Yahweh. If any man have a wife that believeth not, and she be pleased to dwell with him, let him not put her away. And the woman shall have a husband that believeth not, if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else were your children unclean, but now are they holy. So let's break this down a little bit. The children are the benefactors of the righteousness of either the believing father or the mother. The key word in this verse is the word sanctified, which means recognized, as having the privilege to be a partaker of the benefit because of the conversion of at least one parent, but doesn't mean having salvation or escaping judgment for wickedness and sin. Those benefits include being allowed to participate in feast days, the Sabbath day, those rights which belong only to Israelites, only not afforded to Gentiles and heathen. So let's say we have a father come here, his wife, even though they dwell together in unity, she remains back at the home. He brings his children by the virtue that the fact that he is saved, and these children are recognized by the Most High being allowed to participate in his holy feast days because one of the parents are sanctified. That's all this means. There's no big mystery behind it. The children aren't saved just because one parent are saved. They're just allowed the benefit of partaking in the law, statute, and commandments as Yah laid them out by virtue of one of their parents believing, or their father or mother, if that makes sense. All right, verse 15. But if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but Yah hath called us to peace. What knowest thou, O wife, whether thou shalt save thy husband? Or how knowest thou, O man, whether thou shalt save your wife? Okay, skipping down to... Oh, wait a minute, I got a note here. Okay, what in the world did I do here? All right, Ephesians chapter 6. All right, Ephesians chapter 6. Sometimes I get lost in my typing, and anyway. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. We're just about done. It's going to be the full 2 hours. Thank you for your patience, everybody. Okay, this is admonition for the children and admonishment towards the parents. Ephesians chapter 6, 1 through 4 again. Children, obey your father and mother in Yeshua. For this is right. And even I have to reprogram my mind because I'm so used to growing up saying mom and then dad. And that was the training that we were given back then. I'm catching myself still slipping that. But in order to make the right presentation for your children, the father should always be mentioned first before the mother, because that gives them the patriarchal mindset. So forgive me, I'm still working on it. That's a lot of residue that still needs to be worked out. So even my age, I'm still working on myself. Children, obey father and mother in the sight of the Most High, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, thou mayest live long on earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Master. Again, don't give your children any reason to hate the way and to want to walk away from the truth because of your action or inaction as a father and a mother. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, he will not depart from it. The word train means to discipline or to take action, to initiate a way in which your child should go. You be the demonstration. You have the discipline yourself to train them up, to show them what's necessary and what's right. Fathers and mothers must invest in their children. Teach them how to be disciplined in all walks of life, from a good work ethic, how to handle money, daughters how to keep a house and raise their own children, sons how to be providers and protectors over their homes, the principles in life to allow them to be successful in this life, to be productive in this life, to have a life of meaning. The hope is that these principles for life will hold with your children when they are grown, and your time and effort to instill these sound ways will remain with them throughout their lives, and that your children in turn will teach these same things to their children. Again, I'll reflect back on my own children because that's the best, you know, that's the thing I wasn't part of personally, even though I didn't get to see them through their, quote, teenage years. But even from a young age, I instilled, very importantly, respect for older people, definitely respect for older people, having a great work ethic. And even when I would communicate them through the distance while I was living here and they were still back in Minnesota with their mother, I always talked to them about this thing and the principles behind it, to be responsible, you know, to do good to all men, right? And that kind of thing, the best that I could anyway, and to instill them things in them. And, I mean, and nowadays, they're both my children are incredibly successful. My son is a journeyman electrician. He's been working in the field for, what, over 15 years. He's done all kind of different electrical work. He's very good at it. My daughter's she went to college for social work, and she is hasn't been without work. She's faithful to her job. I mean, they're there all the time. There's no complaints. Neither one of them ever been fired. I see them how they raise their children, though there's some things that I would like to say about, especially my grandchildren, but again, you know, they have their own ideas that because they serve life the way they want to serve it, and I'm not going to interfere with that, they already know my stance and my principles. And they still come to me. And when things get really rough, they come and search me out, and they ask me for wisdom from their old, from their dad, right? The old gray-haired dad. But anyway, so that's what I'm talking about. You train them up, right? And you know, like hunting and fishing. I mean, Pastor talks about it all the time. You know, you get out there with your boys, and I understand, you know, some men don't have the knowledge of what I grew up with, so I mean, like I've already told Deacon Bell that I'm looking forward to help his children to, you know, invest them in the woods, you know, Zeffin, and try to do a little hunting with him this year and that kind of thing. I did it with Gabriel. I did it with Ariel. I did it with Elias when they were here, spent time with them. You know, I even bought gloves for all of them, a lot of the boys in there. We played catch for a while and spent time with them. Now I'm older, and anyway, so I'll leave that for the next generation, but I can still do a little bit as grandpa, so I'm going to. Anyway, glory to the King. I thank you all for it. Proverbs 29:15. Rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bring his mother to shame. A child which receives little to no rod, time, or reproof will bring the mother to shame, showing out at a moment's notice, being uncontrollable, screaming at the top of their lungs, demanding out loud. I mean, all you got to do is go to Walmart and sit there for any length of time. You'll see these parents that fail the discipline. You know, they give them the timeout, sit in the corner, and they ain't getting no timeout because they ain't doing what the word requires. But anyway, let me put this out here, and I put this down here because I thought it was important. Let me say this, dads and moms. Unfortunately, in today's backward society, you must exercise awareness when giving your children the rod, especially in public, and when they reach an age where they have the knowledge to rebel to the world and seek out the law of the land. I'm just talking about using discernment and awareness. If your young children are properly disciplined in the privacy of your home, beginning from the earliest ages, then chances are very good that you will not have to go to the measure of a rod out in public. Again, like I said earlier, all I had to do was look at my children. They got right in line again. Or perhaps needed just one whoop on the butt will get them back in line quickly. Again, these soft, effeminate, antichrist, heathen Gentiles will often view discipline by a rod against a child as a form of child abuse and report you to the authorities. This is just a reality. And when dealing with double-digit children, meaning children that are, you know, 10, 11, 12 and going up like that, meaning children who are viewed as teenagers, if they begin to rebel, the rod at this age should probably be withheld, instead use the there's the door mentality and remove them from your life. It is better to secure the whole house than allow one sinner to destroy much good. And this will be a real test of your heart. Will your eye pity? Will your heart spare because they are your children and have a soul tie bound with them? Now, this is just something I'm just putting in here. I'm not going to tell you how to do your house. I'm just saying that everybody calls the authorities now if they see any type of what they believe is improper child, treating a child properly. And I get, y'all can preserve us from anything, right? And if you feel the need that you want to take your child in a Walmart aisle and start whooping his ass, you know, I wouldn't recommend you take his pants down, but you have to remember, you can't, you shouldn't go to the same level that you would behind closed doors. And again, the admonishment is that if you do these things at home in the privacy of your own home or amongst the Israelites that understand the principles, and because we're not in our own land, we can do that where we're kind of sheltered away and hid away. When you get out in a public place with your children, the likelihood that they're going to act out has diminished greatly. I hope I'm making sense. Proverbs 29:17. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest, yea, he shall give delight unto their soul. Do you know families where the children are constantly active, are continually a handful, are impossible to rein in, going from one thing to another, and seemingly can't be slowed or stopped, constantly having to be attended to, giving their parents zero rest? These are children which do not have solid correction, which do not have the firmer discipline applied by the parent, other than passing that, then a passing stop that or don't do that, instead of backing up these words with a rod of reproof. I mean, I understand once or twice you can just like, but it should be corrected every time. At least that's my point. At least attention being brought to it that makes them aware that you're actually paying attention to what they're doing, instead of like, I don't even want to deal with it now because I'm tired. And, no, it's up to you not to allow little things like that to slip, because it's going to pay great dividends later on. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 18. Chasten thy son while there's hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. You know, implying at some point in time the hope to instill into your child through their young ages right discipline and right principle have passed, and after such time nothing more will avail or cause impact in their lives. Make an early impression. Who hasn't heard of or experienced the change in children when the children hit double-digit ages, leaving the years of the single-digit ages, children moving forward in adulthood, children becoming their own man or women? Look, I'm going to finish up this on Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 1. No, that isn't finished, but I'm going to just paraphrase it quick before I run out of time here. But go back and read Deuteronomy chapter 4, 1 through 10, and all it is the admonishment from Moshe to the people that, I'll go to verse 9. Only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eye has seen, and lest they depart from the heart all the days of thy life. But teach them thy sons and thy sons' sons. That is a command that you're supposed to do as a parent. You can't let it slip. You can't avoid it. You have to take time out every day to impart and help explain to your children these things necessary that are the laws, statutes, and commandments of the Most High, because, and this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations, and your children will see that and recognize that. And they need to know that, because you're giving them the opportunity, and you deserve to give, they deserve to be given the opportunity to walk in these things. And if they don't, well, if they don't, they don't. But if they rebel, at least you still did your part, because it's a command. All right, let's see. I'm not going to get through all this, but I had Sirach chapter 42, 9 through 11, Sirach 23, 3 through 10. That's about how father should deal with the daughter, and, you know, the respect between father, mother, and children again. And, again, I ended up the fathers and mothers, you must teach your children the fear of Yahweh, and you must. And anyway, I thought I was close to the end. I still had 3 pages, but I hope I was able to impart something to you out of this study. Again, there was no intent to condemn anybody of anything. That's not the point. It's that I understand the challenges. I can see the challenges that the parents have, or the fathers and mothers have, you know, raising children now in spite of this world. That's, again, the beauty of a community. You can do more so than ever that which is written in the Torah with your children, and you got the advantage of raising good children. And but those that are not part, you still have to, everybody still has to. But anyway, bless y'all. Passover's coming. Y'all prepare your hearts and minds, all right? And you may lift up prayers for Pastor Dahl, especially. Satan's always on the move, and for the leaders and eldership. And again, pray for one another that you may be healed. All right, bless y'all, and much shalom.